Hi, this is Alan Chartok, and I'm delighted to be in conversation today with Ned Sullivan, president of Scenic Hudson. Since 1999, Ned Sullivan has directed Scenic Hudson through a period of dramatic growth in its regional impact. Today, Scenic Hudson is recognized as a regional and national leader in its field. Under his leadership, the organization has forged partnerships responsible for preserving thousands of acres of critical open space and farmland and cleaning up contaminated waterfronts and transforming them into magnificent public parks. Scenic Hudson also played pivotal leadership and supporting roles in three of the region's most extraordinary projects: Walkway Over the Hudson, creation of the world-class Deer Beacon Museum, and daylighting, in quotes, the Saw Mill River in Yonkers, reflecting Mr. Sullivan's effectiveness in fostering green job creation. In 2011, Governor Andrew Cuomo appointed him as the only environmental representative on his Economic Development Council. Prior to joining Scenic Hudson, Mr. Sullivan served as Environmental Commissioner of Maine, where his hallmark was bringing together environmental and business leaders across party lines. Among his achievements, he guided into law landmark legislation ending the discharge of deadly dioxins from pulp and paper company facilities over a decade prior to federal action in that area. As Deputy Commissioner of New York's Department of Environmental Conservation from 1987 to 1995, Mr. Sullivan was charged with starting up the state's $1 billion hazardous waste cleanup initiative and oversaw air, water, and waste management programs, as well as passage of federal and state-supported laws. Welcome, Ned Sullivan. I should say that joining Ned today are two of his partners fighting transmission lines proposed for the Hudson Valley: Daniel McKay, Director of Public Policy at the Preservation League of New York State, where he oversees the League's governmental relations at the federal, state, and local level. Previously, he served as Director of the Albany Office for the New York League of Conservation Voters, and Ian Solomon, who has spent most of his career working in the music business. In late 2013, he was asked by members of his community to head up a local group that would investigate and educate the public on proposals to build new power lines in the Hudson Valley. Since assuming leadership of Farmers and Families for Claverick, he has worked diligently toward those ends, both in conjunction with local government and as a steering committee member of the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition. Welcome, Daniel and Ian.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, so let's start with Ned, of course. You and I have been friends for a long time, and nobody I respect more than you. So did you know since you were a little kid that you weren't going to put up with nonsense on the environment?
Well, thank you, Alan, for having me on the show, and congratulations on your successful fund drive and for bringing the entire community together to support this great radio station under your amazing leadership. It has been my entire career spent in fighting for the environment, and I've had the privilege to do that in many different sectors. I worked for the Environmental Protection Agency at one time. I worked in financing environmental infrastructure projects and cleaning up Boston Harbor. I worked for Governor Mario Cuomo as a deputy commissioner in the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and then went up to Maine and was environmental commissioner up there, serving under a great Governor Angus King, who's now the U.S. Senator for Maine. It's been a privilege to work at Scenic Hudson for the last 15 years, and thanks for sharing the many victories that this organization has led and partnered on over its 51-year history.
Ian, why don't you tell us a little about yourself?
As you said, I've spent my career mostly in the music business.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I work for an Albany-based record label called Equal Vision Records. I started with them and eventually got into the fascinating world of music merchandise, which I do now.
So what's that?
I make band t-shirts.
Oh, I see. So when somebody goes around and sells the t-shirts,
yeah,
you're probably the guy who made them.
Just about anywhere in the country, it's pretty likely that they were made here in Albany, New York.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And how did you get into this?
Well, an email went out among the neighbors, and they said there's this big power line proposal coming down, and we need somebody to step up and represent the interest of the community, and we're having a community meeting. Would you like to come? So I showed up, and there were a room full of people staring at me, asking if I would take the lead, and I said no, and they kept staring at me, so then I said yes.
And so what is it that really motivated you? What are you scared of?
Well, in Columbia County, and I know in Dutchess County as well, there's a really significant tourism economy.
Right.
And secondary to that, agriculture. And we're looking at proposals that would possibly take land through eminent domain, which would decrease agricultural production.
Take land for these transmission lines.
Yeah, to possibly widen the corridors. And also, we're talking about towers that in the town of Claverick are currently 60 feet tall, we see proposals that suggest that those could go up to 165 feet tall.
And what would be bad about that?
Well, you'd see them from every town around there. So you have people coming up from the city. You have people coming in from other areas to enjoy the Hudson Valley and all the great scenery and recreational opportunities that it has to offer. And as they drive into the area, the first thing they would see would be these giant lines that tower probably about 80 feet above the tallest tree in the area.
Would you distinguish that from wind towers?
I don't have personal experience with being that close to wind towers.
But they're big.
They are. They are indeed. Yeah, and I know that, you know, I've seen some research lately that the best sources of wind are available directly offshore around most of the country.
Yeah, so not in my backyard, somewhere else.
Well,
there isn't commercial value wind in much of the Hudson Valley at all. And I know this is an issue that Daniel has focused on, but fortunately, it just hasn't been an issue in the Hudson Valley. I'm personally in favor of wind power.
Okay. Daniel, what's your story?
Well, I'm director of public policy for the Preservation League of New York State, a statewide historic preservation advocacy group.
So what do they do?
So we are involved in making the link between economic development and the preservation and reuse of historic structures, be it on main streets or residential structures across the state. We feel like New York State has a rich heritage, built legacy of architecture, and that's a very important component of the quality of life in this state and in smaller communities, such as in Columbia and Dutchess counties. So we are involved in securing programming and funding to reinvest in historic structures.
So what do you say to all those people who say, you know, this historic stuff is, you know, for rich people as opposed to the working class people?
Well, I think historic preservation serves all sectors of the community. WAMC is a not-for-profit, has the Linda Auditorium across the street, a former historic bank structure. You're working out of a historic Main Street building right here, the studio. These are structures and landscapes that provide significant identity to our New York State communities.
You understand, of course, that I do agree with this. I just want to give you as hard a time as possible. Okay, so the question then, as in the case of Ian, how did you get into this particular fight?
Sure. Well, I live in the town of New Scotland here in Albany County, a rural community just outside of Albany, and I'm also on the town board there. And so we received very early notice as municipal officials that new power lines were proposed through our town. New Scotland is already home to one of the widest electrical utility corridors in the Northeast, and we already have 7 high-tension transmission lines running through our community. Here was a proposal to actually site potentially an eighth line through our town. And, you know, our right-of-way is already so wide that we can probably accommodate a new line down the middle. The tallest towers in our corridor are already so tall, already marring our viewshed, that this proposal probably comes in under those tower heights.
I just learned a new word, viewshed.
Viewshed.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you look across the river at what the potential impact of these lines would be to Columbia and Dutchess counties, you see a very different impact. You see utility corridors that either have to get wider to accommodate a third line, or you see utility corridors where the towers have to get higher to accommodate new transmission.
Are there health concerns here?
I don't think our coalition is focused on health concerns at this moment, but I think there are people
because
who are concerned about that.
Because there used to be people who said, we don't want our cows walking under the thing because they're going to get electric current.
Right. I think those are legitimate issues, but not ones that our coalition has yet had to address.
How come?
Because we are looking at the very basic issue of whether these lines are even needed.
And how do you react to the government? I mean, where is Governor Cuomo on this? What are the issues there? You're handing off to Ned?
Oh, I'm happy to take it, but Ned and I both have thoughts on
Ned,
this.
Now, you know the Cuomos pretty well. You work for Papa Cuomo, and Andrew has, you know, been in touch, right, with you. So where is the government on this?
Well, Alan, a couple of years ago, Governor Andrew Cuomo proposed in his State of the State address the Energy Highway. The theory behind this is that there is power being generated in upstate and western New York that is having trouble finding its way down to the markets, the customers down in New York City
and
the lower Hudson Valley and Long Island, and that we need to add 1,000 megawatts.
Is that a lot?
That's a lot of transmission capacity in basically running through the areas that Ian and Daniel have described, basically coming from west of Albany and running across the river down through the Hudson Valley, through the most verdant and productive farmland that we have in
the region. That's the second word I just learned, verdant.
That means green, Alan, and lush and healthy and beautiful. And running through areas that we and our partners have been working for over a decade to preserve.
Sure.
So that those farms will always be there, so that we'll be able to have our beautiful farm stands, and people are getting their food now, their fresh food from the Hudson Valley all the way down in New York City in the green markets and soup kitchens and so forth. And suddenly we find out that there are going to be these giant towers built through the Hudson Valley to make it cheaper to buy power down in New York City. And so while the governor had a good idea perhaps a couple of years ago to address this concern, events have somewhat overtaken the initiative. And
what events?
It turns out that as we have analyzed the whole concept of building these giant new transmission lines and reacted to the possibility that they're not even going to go down the existing corridors, that they're going to build new utility corridors potentially to accommodate this, that there has been new generating capacity brought online and new transmission lines that are moving quickly through the regulatory approvals and that are making the entire project unnecessary.
So is the regulatory approval, Ned, you know more about this stuff than anybody I know, but is the regulatory approval fixed, as we used to say in the fight game?
I don't know about that, Alan, but I think that the utilities are motivated by building new things, and that's not a great thing. These utilities can get up to 12% return on their investment for building new structures. It's much lower if they're just fixing and maintaining existing facilities.
Is that a possibility? In other words, are you telling us here that if they did that, they would still get the necessary electricity in New York and Long Island and whatever?
Our analysis indicates that the generating capacity and the transmission capacity are already there, and that what we're asking for is that the governor direct the Public Service Commission that is implementing his initiative to go back and take a hard look at whether there's really a need for these. The governor has done something else. He's appointed two new, very senior people in his administration. One is named Richard Kaufman, and he's called the Energy Czar. He's the chairman of NYSERDA, the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. And the other is Audrey Zibelman, who's the chair of the Public Service Commission that is implementing this and oversees all of the regulated utilities in New York State that are responsible for transmission and generation of power. And these are forward-looking officials who have started a separate proceeding, a whole separate initiative to look at the 21st century energy grid in New York State. And they are saying, we can't build our way out of the situation we're in. That's a quote from Audrey Zibelman. And she's saying we should be looking at locally generated power, at solar energy on people's roofs. We should be looking at microgrids, renewable energy generation in a much smaller geographic area. Let's not look at hauling this power all the way from Western New York to solve a problem down in New York City.
Well, but now this is the governor's person.
That's right.
So it sounds to me like what's going on here might be what was going on with fracking. After all, we think that the governor was for fracking in the beginning, and then he got a bite in the posterior from some of his people, and then it started getting studied to death. Now he appoints two people who are saying, not so fast. What do you make of that?
Well, these are people he hired after launching this energy highway. They're smart people. They are focused on the electric system for New York State of the future. And they're coming up with really exciting, important ideas.
But they are, come on, Ned, they are different than what the governor was originally proposing.
That's right. And so we're hoping to bring the two together to get them to look back at this Energy Highway initiative and to really take stock of the fact that there are new facilities coming online, both generating and transmission, that are going to be approved years ahead of any project, any 165-foot towers that might come out of the energy highway. So we're hoping that these two initiatives come together. The governor saw a problem a couple of years ago, and he fine-tuned it in his most recent State of the State, saying, well, if they're built, we want them to stay within the existing utility corridors. You know, that was a good thing, but this isn't quite getting down to the staff level at the Public Service Commission. And so we have been very public about this. Ian just orchestrated a great grassroots event over the weekend to mobilize citizens.
Okay, let's stop for the moment there. Let's go to you, Ian. What was that about and who showed up?
We had a meeting in Churchtown in the town of Claverick in Columbia County, and we had had a number of public officials. We had several hundred members of the public there, and we were fortunate to have a lot of news media there as well covering the event. And we had a scientist, he's a geophysicist from Bard College, who we had come in contact with a little while ago, who really took it upon himself to do a quantitative study of the need. What's the electricity supply? What are the projects in queue? What's the anticipated demand based on demographics and other factors in the downstate area? And this was the unveiling of the results of his study.
Interesting. And what was the passion level? In other words, was this something like fracking where people who might not have been mobilized when the governor first proposed this were now all of a sudden, energized?
The passion level was very encouraging for us. We
1 to 10.
I would say we're at maybe an 8.5.
Okay.
And people feel this is a pretty important issue in Columbia and Dutchess counties. And we had a little concern that that might not still be the case. We had a very large public meeting in January of this year, and it was well attended. And we had, lots of news coverage and lots of elected officials joining us at that point as well. And in the time in between, there's been a little bit of a pause on the procedural level from the Public Service Commission. And we were concerned that during that pause, a little bit of radio silence, that the public would start to drift off to all the other things there are to be outraged about in our world. And we were pleased to find that people were still paying attention and still hold this issue pretty close.
So, Ned, I want to go back to you and give you as hard a time as I can. The governor, of course, I believe, is one of the most strategic, politically strategic thinking people. He can put his finger up in the air. He can say, you know, what looked like a good idea may not have turned out to be a good idea. I once called him Machiavellian, and some of the people on his staff took some exception to that. So it sounds to me, from what you're telling me about this new group, that the governor may be having second thoughts about this, because I truly don't believe that he puts two people who just arrive on this and have their own separate way. He doesn't do that. So if he's putting two people who are going to take some exception to the way that it's being done down there, it may sound like your group is on their way.
Well, we hope we're having an impact, and we need these good ideas to trickle all the way down to the staff level, because the staff tend to be influential in these agencies. They've been around there for generations, decades.
Wait. You're not telling me that the staff tells the governor what to do. I think it's the other way around. You know, there's an old saying about mud flowing downhill. And I think the staff at the Public Service Commission would not be disobeying the governor's wishes. Do you?
Well, there are two different messages being articulated now. We're hearing these very positive messages from his top people. But the staff put out a proposal that completely ignored months and months of...
But when did they put it out?
September.
And just in terms of getting the timeline straight, these other two people who have been appointed as a sort of czars overlooking this thing,
right,
they were appointed when? After September?
Oh, no. They've been on the job for about a year or so, mm-hmm, I'd say. And so they've initiated parallel proceedings to the Energy Highway that seem to be heading in different directions. And so we're hoping that, as I said, that they get the staff to come around to this more forward-looking perspective.
Sure, but let me ask you this.
They're the ones who make the ultimate decisions, the top people, obviously. But the staff hasn't been listening to us and don't seem tuned in to what the top people are saying. They didn't get the memo.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you this. Have any of the three of you taken a look at campaign contributions to the Cuomo campaign from some of the big utilities to find out if anybody's given any money? No?
I haven't done that yet.
I see three people shaking their head no. You think that sometimes counts for anything?
I think that there's a track record in New York State where that does count at multiple political levels. My thought on this.
And you're hearing from Daniel McKay, right? Go ahead.
So, Alan, my feeling on this is that the governor actually was quite responsive initially. The hue and cry that has arisen in the Hudson River Valley in particular has been extremely strong. It matches the outrage that was shared about St. Lawrence Cement a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is the issue right now in the Hudson River Valley. As such, the governor last fall, I think, was hearing from both grassroots, the grassroots build up, as well as from folks who had access to his administration, that you have an issue on your hands here. Here's the Energy Superhighway proposal. It intends to bring new transmission lines down the Hudson River Valley, and it's causing a grave concern. His initial reaction was in the State of the State address last January, and he said, we're not going to allow new lines to be built that are any wider, any taller, or any longer than
so
what already exists.
So that was the original back off.
And so that was the initial response and reaction to what was happening. Since then, the argument has moved from that type of community impact to one of, is there actually even a need here for these lines? And is the extraordinary cost of building these lines, which is about $1.3 billion, is that worth
who pays the ratepayers? The ratepayers.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. 80 to 90% of that cost will be passed on to ratepayers.
Mm-hmm.
If those lines are not needed, if that cost can be avoided, you know, that's where the arguments are beginning to shift.
But in your heart of hearts,
yes, sir,
do you really believe that those lines are not needed? You know, there's always the argument by the preservation, not you, preservation, but the people who say, we can do this by generating solar panels on everybody's house, mm-hmm. which aren't going to get done. At least I don't think they're going to get done in the short run. So therefore, is this sort of one of those arguments that really doesn't hold any water?
Well, I think we are seeing about 10,000 megawatts of new generation capacity proposed in the New York City metro region, south of where the supposed traffic jam actually exists
mm-hmm.
or is purported to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So we have new generation coming online that was never accounted for in the initial determination of need for
transmission.
That's more than enough. We're trying to deliver.
It's enough so you don't need the transmission lines?
Right. If we have if the transmission lines are designed to deliver 1,000 megawatts of new electricity into New York, and there's 10,000 megawatts of planned development of new generation capacity in the New York metro area, then that obviates the need right
okay,
there.
Okay, let's just stay with that for a second, Daniel. Is it 10,000 watts that has already been built, or is it 10,000 watts that has been planned? Big difference.
Sure. It's 10,000 megawatts that is planned for construction, part of the New York Independent System Operator queue. So it's already moving through various reviews, and the New York State Independent System Operator has already been informed of the intention to construct these facilities. Certainly, some of those facilities are several years down the line. They need to attract financing. They need their regulatory approvals, et cetera. Even if 20% of those or 30% of those projects get approved, we have still covered the 1,000 megawatt need that this new transmission is supposed to provide. We probably even have room to take Indian Point offline in that calculation as well.
I see that Ian Solomon has been making notes. Was there something that Daniel just said that provoked you?
Well, Alan, I think of this project, this exact project that we're talking about, as a bit of an artifact of the previous way of doing this. And I think that's one of our biggest objections to it. You know, we've spoken with a number of top-level transmission engineers in our research for this, and the consensus in the industry seems to be that in 20 years, this will not be a conversation people are having. We are now in the dying days of the big transmission build-out. This one project is really an artifact. The new way of doing this is going to be power generated where power is used.
Are we talking about solar and windmills and things of that kind? Or what are we talking about that will take the place of the transmission lines?
Yeah, all of that and traditional generation as well. You know, the Danskammer plant is receiving fast track approval now to come
and
back
online. What is
online.
That?
I can fill in that.
Yeah, Ned.
The 10,000 megawatts that Daniel referred to and Ian is a combination of both new generation and new transmission projects. Danskammer is a coal-fired power plant that is on the Newburgh waterfront. So it's
Whoa,
in the mid-Hudson.
Isn't coal terrible?
It is. Coal is terrible. And it was retired. It was going to be mothballed. And then suddenly the owners of it decided, we're going to put it back online. And it's now being powered by gas. Natural gas.
Natural gas, doesn't that just ring a familiar bell in terms of fracking?
Fracking, yeah. So there's no free lunch, that's for sure.
Yeah. So which is worse?
But it's already got generating capacity now. And
with coal? With gas?
No, with gas.
Okay.
It's already got the capacity to operate now, and New York State is fast-tracking its approval. There is a hydroelectric facility called the Champlain-Hudson Express, which is proposed to bring hydroelectric power down from Canada all the way to Queens and for use in Manhattan and the lower Hudson. that received its New York State approval over a year.
And how are they getting it down there? How are they getting it down there?
It's going to go under the Hudson.
Under the Hudson.
Under the Hudson. And
how do you like your fried fish? Go ahead.
And that is received state permits 2 years ago. It just received its presidential permit at the federal level. And so it's very far advanced.
How do they do that under the Hudson? They got to build something that's low enough?
They use a technology that basically digs a little trough, lays the cable down, mm-hmm. and then covers it all at the same time.
You approve of this?
Well, Riverkeeper and Scenic Hudson both formally intervened in the permitting of this. We were very concerned about the routing of it through sensitive habitat. They were going to run through the PCB contaminated area. And we intervened and got them to modify the routing of it to avoid sensitive habitat. So we worked with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation.
Yeah, but what do you want to avoid?
We want to avoid spawning grounds where fish are most likely to
You want to do that because?
Because we don't want a construction project running through important habitat.
So it's the construction, not the electricity.
That's right.
So it occurs to me, and probably some of the people who are listening here, Ned, if you could lay down that Canadian thing under the Hudson River, why can't you lay down the other thing through the Hudson?
Well, that's one of the things that we've all been advocating for is undergrounding of these transmission lines.
Right.
And the utilities say, well, that's very expensive. We can't do that. Well, it can be done, and particularly if they're siting new transmission lines. The engineers tell us, Alan, that there's about a 40-mile limit to how far you can go with these high-voltage lines underground before you have to come back up again.
Well, how do you distinguish between, how do you distinguish between the Canadian one and this project?
Okay, well, we're going to get very technical here for a minute, and... Okay. The ones that are coming down from Canada are called direct current. And the ones that are being proposed for the energy highway above ground are alternating current.
we all learned that in grade school.
That's right. And so direct current can run for much longer distance.
Oh, interesting.
Underground. And that's what the hydroelectric project.
And when it gets there, the direct current, we all use alternating current.
That's
it
right.
can it be, converted,
be converted,
converted back, right?
That's right.
So exactly. Why couldn't this be converted back also?
Well, the technical engineers say 40 miles is the limit for alternating current underground.
So why not direct current underground the same way?
Well, you know, that's an interesting idea. And unfortunately, the Energy Highway explicitly said we want above ground alternating current lines. They didn't say we have a need for 1,000 megawatts of power downstate. Give us your best proposal. They didn't say that, and we wish they had.
Yeah.
Because the entity that operates the New York State grid, New York State Independent System Operator, they have done an analysis, and they have said, Alan, that the only remedy for this problem that actually is positive in benefit to cost is conservation, increasing energy efficiency, not building new transmission lines and not building new generating plants.
Okay.
So there are things that can be done to make our system more efficient.
So they agree with the two czars that Cuomo put
in. The two czars and our coalition, which is called the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition. We're all part of a coalition that isn't saying, you know, we don't think there's a need to do something. We're saying, let's do the most smart thing. Let's do the most efficient thing. And so we think that there are things in the works and remedies that are going to be smart and efficient and that are not going to damage the landscape and the historic sites and the farms and the quality of life that is the foundation of the economy in the Hudson Valley.
So let's assume you get the Canadian project, it goes under the Hudson River. Let's assume that some of the things you're calling for, even converting from AC to direct current and back again under the Hudson, if you wanted to do it that way, or generating local projects that would generate the electricity, wouldn't there always be some group who stood up and said, not here. I don't want to do this. In other words, we'd rather have this than that because, you know, there's a whole group of people who just are deeply suspicious of government, its motives, and what it's doing. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, I think the high tension line.
This is Daniel speaking now. Go ahead.
I think
Daniel.
The high tension lines anywhere in the state, they're offensive on an equal opportunity basis. You know, the initial issue in Columbia and Dutchess counties was concern about eminent domain, where the utility is going to have the right to claim property to expand the right of way.
And the answer is yes, they do have that right.
They do have that right, and it's one that should be used very carefully and with extraordinary justification if it is to be used. You know, I think we're seeing in this situation, is there a need to do that? No, there is not. You take a drive in any direction, and you quickly run across these power lines.
Well, there's eminent domain. The eminent domain is there for a reason. It's there so government can do what it damn well wants to do, right?
Right. So as citizens, we need to be pushing back against that. Is there a legitimate argument to exercise that type of power?
Okay, let's go to Ian Solomon for a moment. Ian, I'm so fascinated by this business of, would there be an objection no matter what anybody ever wanted to do? In other words, you know your people, and you're sitting at the head of this coalition, and let's just say that one of the things that has been posited as an alternative was brought up and say, well, good, we won. Wouldn't there still be a group that would say, no, we don't want this?
There may be. I don't think our position is that we need to verify that every citizen of New York State is happy with the
ultimate
outcome.
No, I don't mean that. I mean that as soon as somebody creates any kind of a project, there will be a natural pushback from whoever's living in that area.
That's right. Yeah. You know, I think our policy is to really look at this objectively. There are cost-effective ways of solving a problem. There is a correct way to investigate whether a certain solution is the solution that works. And I think the basis of our work is to do that and then try to educate the public.
Ned, compare this to the fracking, anti-fracking group for us, would you?
Well, I think the fracking issue runs to a real visceral concern about the environmental and health damage that is entailed with injecting chemical-laden fluids underground and then causing the explosions that will affect water quality. The fact that this is a boom and bust industry, we're already seeing gas prices going down. So you face the specter of the fracking, the gas developers coming in, wreaking havoc, causing damage to communities, and then
before we know what we're doing,
pulling out, leaving a ravaged landscape, contaminated groundwater behind.
And has Scenic Hudson had a position on this?
Yes. We've opposed fracking,
okay.
Basically,
okay.
Through the
now
regulatory process.
As a professor, I want you to compare and contrast the transmission lines with the fracking.
Yeah, I think the issue of the transmission lines is much more of a concern that the visual impacts of the transmission lines are going to damage the very foundation of the economic revitalization that is being experienced through the Hudson Valley. And Scenic Hudson was asked by our colleagues like Ian and others to get involved and to bring our expertise to bear, join this coalition so that we could help.
Asked by who?
By our partners like Ian
Absolutely.
And Daniel, and many of the groups are led by elected officials. Daniel's an elected official in his community, and we have people in Livingston, a small town in Columbia County. We have an elected official from Milan. We have the supervisor of Pleasant Valley, which is the terminus. This is where the new transmission lines are going to stop, and they have a massive facility already there, a substation in Pleasant Valley.
How does it stop there? Because I thought it was going down to New York.
Well, it's a substation where multiple lines come into there, and then they pass it on to go farther downstate. So it's one of these massive substations. You go in, you see this fenced-in area with lines coming in from multiple directions.
But, Ned, you're Scenic Hudson, and as I just pointed out, and we're all listening to Ned Sullivan talking about his beautiful Hudson River, which he's done so much to preserve. But is it your sense that these towers will poison what you've been trying to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As my colleagues have pointed out, many of these communities, virtually all these communities, are already suffering from these existing towers at 65 feet. Now they're proposing to go to 165 feet. So the towers that are visible from a much shorter range are going to be visible from Olana. They're going to be visible.
For those people who are listening somewhere else, Alana is the Frederick Church home, a beautiful place in Greenport next to Hudson. Yeah,
that's right. There's a great place, the Omega Institute. Have you ever been down there?
Indeed, I have.
Wonderful place. They get about 20,000 people a year. President Clinton spoke there last year. Ted Turner is coming this year. People come from all over the world to have retreats there. And the transmission lines run right next to the Omega property.
Yeah.
And Omega has virtually stopped its capital planning. They have stopped investing in the physical plant other than maintenance, because if the towers that are now 65 feet go to 165 feet, suddenly the entire environment of the Omega Institute will be transformed. So, you know, here is a major operation, 20,000 people a year, that is saying this is so serious that we are not going to continue to. They were planning to build a major expansion of their food center, their cafeteria.
Would this be counterintuitive when you think about, for a politician like the governor, to alienate the Omegas and the Olanas and the other places?
I think so. I think the governor has realized that there are new ways to do this that are coming on, that are being championed by the people that he has hired. And so this is about the economy. The governor has been very focused on regional-based economic development plans.
Sure.
And this runs counter to the very ideas that are coming out of his Regional Economic Development Council.
Now, Daniel McKay, when you are, as an elected official in your own right, Preservation League, you know, in your professional thing, is it your sense that you can win this?
Oh, yes, I believe we can win this.
Is that just palaver, or is that real?
I think we can win it for several reasons. One is I have seen the Public Service Commission deliver the correct results in several energy siting issues. In the cases I've followed most closely, they relate to wind energy siting and impacts to historic resources. And I've seen historic and cultural resources win the issue and severely reshape siting or actually prevent siting of commercial scale wind energy in places where it really should never have been built.
And what is it that will do that? In other words, is it your colleague Ian Solomon coming up with a group of people who will wave their fists or say, don't do this? What is it that a governor and his people will listen to?
Well, I think it's a blend of factors. I think the grassroots component is extraordinarily important, and the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition has delivered the grassroots message in magnificent fashion. I think it takes regional players of the status of Scenic Hudson to be involved in prominently, you know, leading and shaping the message and using all the tools at their disposal. Their legal staff has been heavily engaged in this. I think it takes...
To get money, does Historic Preservation get money from the governor?
We administer a grant fund that is funded by the New York State Council for the Arts.
Do you think he's going to be happy with you?
I think we're all working towards a right decision here. I think the decision, I think the case that the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition is making here is one that serves the governor's purposes.
And how so?
Because I think he understands that a sustainable economy in this state is built on making long-term decisions that that benefit multiple sectors, not just one need versus another. There is a way, if there really is a need to bring new transmission through the Hudson Valley, I think there's a way to do that that has minimal impacts. And that means going underground, perhaps. That means rewiring our existing transmission with more efficient wires, more efficient conductors. I don't think the Public Service Commission has looked into that as thoroughly as they need to. We've asked them to do that. But if we can obviate the need, if we can make a case that the need doesn't exist in 2014 or 2015, it actually is 2040, then we have time to let technology catch up to the issue here. One of the paradoxes for me in all this is that we've seen appropriate and extraordinary investment in renewable energy in New York State. We have seen significant gains in energy conservation and energy efficiency. And so we've really been pushing the market, pushing the envelope on both the generating side and the use side, but we're still connecting the generation in use with an early 20th century technology.
Okay, that sounds right. Or as I would say sometimes, yeah. But here's my question. You're an elected official. What is your job as an elected official?
I'm council person for the town of New Scotland, and I'm a public servant trying to address issues that are identified in my community.
Well, now, what is the likelihood that you can export your passion on this to other elected officials? Because that's what will make the governor sit up and take notice.
And I think Ian and Ned can both report an extraordinary response in the Hudson Valley from local electeds. You know, Assemblyperson Dee Dee Barrett been very involved. Mm-hmm. Mr. Gibson, I know Congressman Gibson has been very involved in both this issue as well as citing a transmission
line going through
Kinderhook. Is
the line going through Kinderhook?
No.
Okay.
No.
Stuyvesant. Goes through Stuyvesant.
Just right.
Just over.
Right by there.
That's right.
Senator Kathy Marchione has been, you know.
We're talking Republicans and Democrats.
It's
right?
A bipartisan issue, yes, and it has been recognized as such.
Yeah. So if the state Senate, as we speak now, stays Republican, will that make a difference in the way in which all of this goes, as opposed to the Democrats running it? I mean, the Democrats will be, let me just say, New York City oriented, because they are. The Republicans tend to be a little bit more upstate. You get it? You get the question?
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I think this issue transcends. You know, we've been focused appropriately on the Hudson River Valley and the impacts of transmission siting there. The four utilities that are competing to develop these lines have proposed projects that actually span 18 counties, over 80 municipalities. This line could go down the west side of the Catskills instead. It could go down the west side of the Hudson River instead.
Well, neither side of which is going to be very happy when that decision is made.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. And yet I think the communities that have seen the threat most clearly are those on the east side of the Hudson River. That's where the impact is greatest.
Ned Sullivan?
Well, you know, Daniel's been very articulate on this, and there's an additional consideration that he alluded to earlier, Alan, and that is cost. The estimated cost is up to $1.3 billion.
Yep.
Now, the rationale for this congestion, this fact that you can't get the transmission of energy down to New York City, it really boils down to a cost issue. And the Public Service Commission, the ultimate decision maker on this, says that it's costing downstate ratepayers about $250 million a year because of this pipeline issue. You know, you can't get the power down there. And that really means that there's too much demand for the power, and so it's upping the price of it. And it turns out that when you do the math and you figure out, well, what's it going to cost to maintain a $1.3 billion capital project, it's a little bit more than $250 million a year.
Yeah.
So this is going to get socked to the ratepayers, and that doesn't make sense. You've got a solution that is as costly as the problem it's trying to address.
Okay, Mr. Scenic Hudson, Ned Sullivan, I'm trying to get a handle on this. Where will these towers physically be? In the middle of the river, on one side of the river, on the other side, where will they be?
Well, they're in the Hudson Valley. They're proposed to run through the towns that we've been mentioning. They would go above ground.
Yeah.
To cross the Hudson, they would be above ground. So it would be one more set of towers and wires crossing the Hudson. Then it would go through Livingston. It would go through, there are four different lines out there. One of the problems with this is that they've made this a competitive process, and so they've asked companies all over the country to bid on this. And the companies that don't control the right-of-way are proposing new utility corridors. That's where we get this threat of eminent domain. If you don't own the utility corridor and you want to build a billion-dollar project, you buy a new one, and, you know, by eminent domain. So it could run through our farmland in Stuyvesant. It could run through our farmland in Livingston, in Milan, in Clinton, and down to Pleasant Valley, which is east of Poughkeepsie. So these are places that value their beauty, that value their farms, that value. This is not just about businesses and institutions like Omega Institute. It comes down to individuals whose real estate has been basically
violated.
Caught in irons.
Yeah.
You know, they can't sell. Nobody wants to buy. Who would buy a property that may have a 165-foot tower in their backyard. And so people who, a veteran who wanted to move, fix up a building on his existing property so he could rent out his existing home, he's stuck. He can't do that. A young couple that was going to come back home to their community and take over a home on a farm that they grew up on, they've left. So they've said, there's too much uncertainty here. We're not going to come back home again. So this is affecting, you know, the grassroots. This is affecting people, businesses, historic resources, and everybody. And so we're hoping that the governor will see that while he initiated something with the best of intentions, that he's brought in smart new people who see, have a vision of the future that builds on the state-of-the-art technology today and of the future. And there's a better idea already on the table. This is cost prohibitive. And as Ian has pointed out, it would invest in a technology of the past.
So I'm going to give each of you a minute to get your crystal balls out and tell me what's going to happen. You want to start? Let's start with Ian Solomon.
The Public Service Commission gets its way with its new set of proposals. They look at everything from a holistic perspective, taking into account the need, taking into account what is most cost effective, what delivers the best benefit for the lowest cost, which their own studies have shown is not transmission and is likely not generation. They will make the decision to go with what is best cost-wise and effect-wise for the people of New York State, and the rest of the state agencies will go along with them.
So you're predicting a victory based on the fact that your political class and your individuals are really taking up the fight.
That's right. I think the argument against this particular proposal and in favor of more modern solutions is very persuasive all the way around.
Okay. So, Daniel McKay, Preservation League, elected official, New Scotland, your crystal ball.
Well, my feeling is we can't afford not to win. New Scotland is already sort of a vision.
Losing is not an option.
Losing is not an option because New Scotland is a vision of the industrial blight and utility corridors that scar a very beautiful rural landscape at the base of the Helderbergs and from Thatcher Park, for instance. I don't want to see us repeat those mistakes in other parts of the state, particularly in an area as beautiful as the Hudson River Valley, beautiful and historic. So I think what has combined here on an extraordinary foundation of the, you know, the degree and the energy and the persuasiveness of the grassroots role that's being built in the Hudson River Valley, we win this issue. Because we win it not only because the local political pressure is there, not only because the grassroots pressure, I think, is only rising in voice and in volume, but we win because the cost arguments are on our side. We win because if we really want to build a 21st century energy infrastructure, we need to look at the transmission component with as much innovation and with as much incentive as we have provided to energy generation.
So you win because of the rationale, but not because of the politics?
No, I think the politics are paying attention to the rationale. The rationale serves the politics. If we can avoid a $1.3 billion ratepayer investment, then we should do that. That's a win on
well,
both
that's
the political
policy.
And local level.
The policy. My view would be, and I'm going to ask Ned about this right now, that the key player here is Andrew Cuomo. So he's got his finger up in the air, seeing which way the wind is blowing. And according to these other two guys, Ned, the wind is not blowing his way.
Well, I think the governor started the initiative. He fine-tuned it by saying he wanted it to stay within the right-of-way. He hired these smart top-level people who see the energy grid of the future is going to use renewables, it's going to be better for climate change, it's going to be based on efficiency, which the technical people all say is the way to go. So I think the governor is going to connect the dots and see that this is both the right thing to do and it is doable because the Champlain-Hudson Express bringing hydropower down the river is going to solve the problem. And we have 10 times more projects in the works than the 1,000 megawatts that the initiative was aimed at providing. And even when we take into account closing down Indian Point, which is something the governor has pledged to do, we still have excess power. So the problem is solved, and politics and policy align.
We've been in conversation today with Ned Sullivan, president of Scenic Hudson. Ned, one of my great heroes, thanks so much for joining us today. Joining Ned were two of his partners fighting the transmission lines proposed for the Hudson Valley, Daniel McKay, director of public policy at the Preservation League of New York State, where he oversees the league's governmental relations at the federal, state, and local level. And also Ian Solomon, who spent most of his career working in the music business. In late 2013, he was asked by members of his community to head up a local group that would investigate and educate the public on proposals to build new power lines in the Hudson Valley. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Al.
You've been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on the In Conversation with Alan series, or to order additional copies of this or any interview in the series, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us on the web at WAMC.org.